From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. And this morning, as part of our ongoing series, Resilient Youth, we speak with Carrie Pickus, co-founder of Trailhead Parent Support, a nonprofit dedicated to helping parents of struggling teens and young adults. After her own family's struggles, Carrie created weekend retreats to help parents of teens and young adults find tools, support, and hope.
And in the second half, we speak with Caroline Miller. She's the executive director of the Utah Avalanche Center. She'll be joining us to talk about the ongoing mission of the Avalanche Center and also about this great party coming up on September 11th. It's the 32nd annual Backcountry Benefit. That all coming up this hour on The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
Our next guest, Carrie Pickus, is the co-founder of Trailhead Parent Support. It's a nonprofit dedicated to helping parents of struggling teens and young adults. Carrie, along with her partner and husband, Josh Pickus, bring both professional expertise and deeply personal experience to this work.
After losing their 21-year-old son to suicide in 2019, Carrie and Josh transformed their grief into purpose, becoming a parent coach and advocate for families facing similar challenges. With Trailhead Parent Support, the Pickuses and their colleague, therapist Brian Lipinski, have created weekend retreats right here in Park City for parents.
The retreats emphasize self-care, compassion, and a deeper understanding of what adolescents and young adults may be experiencing. Carrie's mission is rooted in her own story and in the belief that parents don't have to walk this road alone. This interview, of course, is part of our monthly installment called Resilient Youth. Carrie, thank you for being here and for sharing both your work and your heart. So, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
This is a big endeavor for you to face your grief. Not only that, but to then fully embrace other families that might be going through similar things that your family experienced.
Yes, it is a big endeavor. So to give you a little background, when our child started to show some struggles in early adolescence, it really threw us for a loop. Josh and I felt like we were good parents, we were well-intentioned, but we had no idea what to do with a child who was struggling. And so for the next 10 years of his life, we really dove deep. And over the course of that time, I discovered that there were certain core principles that were really helpful to me. It took me a long time to find them, and I developed a passion for sharing those with other parents so that it wouldn't take them 10 years to find them. And that's why I got some training to be a parent coach. I started coaching for the Partnership to End Addiction and in private practice. And I've coached about 100 parents. And in that experience, I discovered that while parent coaching can be helpful, it seemed like having a deeper experience would be much more effective for parents, a time when they could bond with other parents and also get a chance not just to learn the tools and techniques they might need, but also to practice them in a safe environment, in a case study, if you will, kind of a Socratic method, where they're not actually in a crisis with their child, but they can practice the skills so that when they find themselves in that situation, they have the confidence to deal with it.
Yeah. Wow. You know, none of us come into this world as experts at all at being a parent. I mean, it's truly amazing that we even have this little infant. Thank goodness it can't move on its own for a while we figure out, what we're doing. It's such an uncharted path. And I think about, for anyone who's been a parent or is a parent now of an adolescent, we have no idea if they're struggling or not. they probably are struggling, you know, we've all been adolescents. And
they leave a whole different life online sometimes than we even know about as parents in some ways.
Yeah, that's a fairly new development, but it's definitely intensified the challenges of being an adolescent and the challenges of parenting an adolescent. And it's true, there's no manual given to us at the hospital. The advice our pediatrician gave us was don't drop him on his head.
Exactly.
Well, it must be very affirming for other parents to be in this space where they can be vulnerable, because I think sometimes there's a sense of keeping up appearances, that everything's fine, our family's fine, our kids are achieving, we're achieving. And Park City can be a pretty high-achieving place, and so you don't really want to always talk about the weaknesses in the fabric of what's going on in your lives. Is that part of the process that you work through on your weekends?
Yeah, that is a huge part of it, because if you have a child who is struggling, it is such a lonely road. And part of it is what social media has done to us as parents, because everyone's putting out their best lives on social media. Mm. And we all think our neighbors and friends are doing a much better job and that their kids are thriving. And that may or may not be the case. And the truth is that if you do happen to have a teen or a young adult who really is not thriving, it's a very hard thing to tell other people. And if you do tell other people, you might get a lot of different advice. It's the challenge is you're sorting through, maybe on one side you have someone telling you, you have to take the hinges off the doors of your child's bedroom. Mm-hmm. And then you have another friend or relative saying, they're just fine, just leave them alone. And then you're trying to chart the path. And one of the big things that we really try to do in the course of the weekend is help parents realize that they really are the experts in their family and their child. And how do they take that expertise and make their own decisions and feel comfortable with their own decisions?
You say that you went through, was it, you got advice from like 25 different therapists during the time, or 20 therapists during the time that your son was struggling. And that shows that you did really take a deep dive into what was going on with him. I'm wondering, you know, I guess it's funny, as a parent, you go to these questions that were, you know, are, what did you notice first? And did the addiction come later, or the mental health issues come later? You know, what was the order of things? And I guess we ask those questions as parents because we want to relate it to our own parenting. You know, hearing your story might help us. And I'm sure you encounter this all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first, let me say that you do see your child. And even though they're an adolescent and part of their job is for you not to see them entirely, you probably know how they're doing, really. But the signs are there, and they may be that they're struggling in a class or two. It may be that they're starting to act out against authority figures. That's a big one. It might be that they're making risky decisions, which, of course, most adolescents are making risky decisions, but maybe riskier than feels comfortable. And if you're lucky, they may actually tell you that they're not doing so well. And one of the things that we really emphasize in our retreat is those communication skills that allow you to connect with your child, to give your child room so that they feel comfortable telling you what they're feeling and what their fears and anxieties might be, so that you can respond to them in a way that connects you to them.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. And just to clarify, this is just for the parents. It's not for the parents and the child. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you for clarifying. Yeah, I think the parents need space on their own. And let me just say, in our community, we are very lucky to have an organization, Live Like Sam, that helps kids on their front. And so Ron Jackenthal of Live Like Sam has been such a great supporter of us, and we in turn are also a big supporter of Live Like Sam because their programs are so helpful for the teens in our community. So I know you guys know they're having a big gala coming up, and mm-hmm. they also ongoing throughout the year could use support. So I would just say, for your children, check out Live Like Sam, but our program is for the parents, Trailhead Parent Support.
Yes, we are big fans of Live Like Sam and Ron. Let me ask you this. Do you find that, I'm sure that there are some blanket techniques that everyone could benefit from in their relationships or as parents, but are there some things that are addressed about the parents' relationships with their themselves or with each other? Because sometimes I know one parent might be gangbusters to do it some way, and another parent's like, oh, just let the kid be the way they are. Or, you know, like there's sometimes conflict in the way they want to approach a struggling child.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great point, because one of the key components for parenting is how are you co-parenting?
Okay.
And there isn't a family with a teenager or young adult who hasn't experienced some co-parenting issues, unless there truly is only one parent in the relationship. But if there's more than one, learning how to work with each other is such a key part of it. And that is something we address in our retreat as well, because even if only one parent is at the retreat, they're going to go home, and whether they live with their co-parent or not, if you're not parenting on the same page, your adolescent is smart enough to figure that out. And it's not just a place where they might manipulate you as parents. It's also very confusing for them as kids.
Yeah. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Carrie Pickus. She, along with her husband, Josh, have founded a group called Trailhead Parent Support. It's a nonprofit dedicated to helping parents of struggling teens and young adults. And of course, this is part of our ongoing series, Resilient Youth, which is underwritten. We're in partnership with Live Like Sam. And it is interesting that I was thinking about this morning, that we can do all we can do to make resilient youth. But if we are not resilient as parents, and if we don't develop those tools as parents, then how can we best model and how can we be our best selves as parents to create and to help foster the resilient youth in our house? So this is really important. So you have this retreat coming up October 9th through 11th, and you have room for 5 families. It's located at a private home here in Park City. Tell us more about the structure.
Sure. So I will get into the structure, but I also want to say that you are so on point to talk about how we as parents have to have resilience. And that is another actually element of our retreat, is to give parents some tools to learn a little bit of emotional regulation for themselves and to learn how to stay calm in the face of the whirlwind that is raising an adolescent. So the retreat is basically 2.5 days. Parents will arrive on Thursday evening, where we'll just set the scene and establish some ground rules, get to know each other a little bit. And then the real work and fun will begin on Friday. And there are several components. One of the components is to give the parents an opportunity to really tell their story and connect with each other. And then we spend a whole afternoon really diving into what might be going on from your child's perspective that is difficult to understand. Parents often don't have anyone they can ask these questions to, and that's why it's so important to have someone like Brian with us who can really answer the questions from the perspective of someone who's worked with thousands of teens and young adults, often who are not doing very well. So that's a big part of Friday. Saturday, we really dive into the tools and techniques of communication, connection, boundary and limit setting, and consequences. These are really the bread and butter of parenting, and they're not that difficult with an 8-year-old, but they're much more difficult with adolescents and young adults. And we spend some time learning kind of the core principles, but a lot more time really practicing the core principles, going through situations that these parents might have already experienced or will experience, and as a small group, really exploring, okay, so what do you say? What questions do you ask? When you anticipate this might happen, what kind of boundaries will work in your home? What kind of consequences are you comfortable with and that you really will be able to be consistent about? And those are very individual questions. There is no right or wrong answer, but in a very small group, we can play with them a little bit so that by the end of Saturday, parents will feel like they really know what they're trying to achieve when they're in challenging parenting situations.
I think this is a good time to mention your email, which is trailheadparent@gmail.com, all one word, trailheadparent, lowercase. Because I'm picturing a parent listening to this now and wondering, you know, am I a right fit for this? Is my child, are we far enough down the road that we think that we would fit in with these other families? You know, as we've talked about already, you were seeking the advice of 25 therapists. Your son went to wilderness therapy, went to therapeutic boarding school, did all these things. At what point, and we should probably also talk about Brian Lipinski that you just mentioned, we mentioned in the intro, you know, is it Brian that determines who is eligible? Is that the right word to take part?
Brian and I are working together, and I think that if you think about the whole range of parenting situations, there are some people whose situations are extreme for one reason or another. Maybe their child already has a significant addiction, or their child may have, for example, a rather advanced form of autism. Those parents probably need more than what Trailhead Parent Support is doing. But for most parents who are in a situation where they feel like they're struggling to figure out how to connect with their child and how to set boundaries for their children, they are in the right place. But the best way to determine that is really to have them contact us through the email, and we'll have a conversation or two and figure out where they're at. I mean, for me, honestly, I wish I had a program like this when my son was 13. I think that I can't say that I can change, that I would have necessarily been able to change my son's trajectory, but I absolutely could have been in a better place, and Josh also, we could have been in a better place as parents if we felt like we really understood what we were trying to do.
That makes a lot of sense too. How are the costs covered? Is this something that, like, is there a cost per family or is it a sponsored situation?
Yeah, so at this point we are just trying to cover our costs of the retreat. And the retreat includes all of the room and board, except for one Saturday night when you're off on your own to have dinner, but all the other meals are covered. We want everyone on site, all of the wellness experiences, all of the programs, and then follow-up for several months afterward is included. And so the cost per couple is $5,000, and per person, if there's only one parent, is $2,500. If someone has a problem with the tuition, though, I do encourage you to call us, because we are a nonprofit. We're really aiming to help parents. That is our passion and our goal and our reason for being. And so we don't want money to stop anyone from participating.
That's very kind of you. You, when we were speaking a little bit before the interview started, you mentioned that you actually had trained to become kind of a parent, was it a parent counselor?
Or parent coach.
A parent coach before the events transpired with your son, before he passed away. And can you share a little bit about maybe some of the surprising things you learned about how to work with other parents, or part of that process of just what is taught, what can be taught to really help us?
Yeah, I mean, and there are so many key things that it took me so long to learn.
Sorry, I don't mean to make you do it in a nutshell.
No,
I'm sure there's a lot to it.
No, there's a lot. But some of the key things is, first of all, putting this into perspective. We are all doing the best we can as parents. And all of us have strengths as parents. And so learning to help people tap into their strengths instead of focusing on their weaknesses, that was a huge one. The other thing is just understanding, and this is a principle that you learn a lot in addiction training, it just understanding what we can control and what we can't control. And so that teaching parents to focus on their piece of it and how they control that, and recognizing that an adolescent, a young adult, you're not going to control them. So you really have to figure out how you collaborate with them. And I think as parents, we spend so much of our child's young childhood being in positions of control, which is a lot more comfortable. And then all of a sudden you have this adolescent who doesn't necessarily listen to you all the time. And how do you adjust? How do you go from being the person in charge to the collaborator?
Oh, that's an interesting distinction.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit more about the work that you did previous to your son's death. I'm blanking on the name of the organization.
Partnership to End Addiction?
Yes, yeah. That.
So the partnership is a nationwide nonprofit, and they have a program on for parents who or loved ones of people who are struggling with addiction that provides a small amount, just 5 or 6 sessions of coaching. And so I became in 2020 a coach for them, and I've been coaching for them for the last 5 years. And it's very similar to the parent coaching I do in private practice, because I work mostly with parents whose teens are not in a situation of serious physical drug addiction, but might be misusing or relying on weed, alcohol, prescription drugs they might be able to find to just help them with some of their challenges. And so a lot of these parents, they call the partnership helpline, they get connected with me, and I work with them to help them start to get their footing. And in fact, Trailhead Parent Support really came out of that experience, because after 5 or 6 sessions, I was recognizing that a lot of parents were moving on the right road, but boy, they could really use a lot more support, and they could also use the benefit of the creation of a parent community. Mm. Because they have so many voices in their heads that don't understand what they're going through. If they could have a group of 8 or 10 parents who they have ongoing connection with, who maybe are experiencing something similar, and honestly, it could be parents whose child is spending all their time in the basement playing video games. It's pretty similar in terms of from a parenting perspective. Or they could have a daughter who might be acting out socially, or someone, a teen who is using social media in ways that are not helping their mental health. All of these situations, from a parenting perspective, if you had a parent community who you could talk through, okay, I've experienced this, now what I do, how do I talk to my child, or we're thinking about setting this boundary, how do you think this will go? I think that's the model that we're trying to put forth that I think could be so helpful to these parents.
Yeah, absolutely. That question of setting this, we're thinking of setting this boundary, how do you think it will go? I think that's a question that every parent runs through. I don't want to distance myself from mm-hmm. my kid by imposing this really strict regulation. I know they need strict regulation and limits. It's such a big question. You have other children as well?
I do, yeah. We have a 28-year-old son who is an aspiring filmmaker and is just a terrific kid. But, I mean, to be fair, I think that he's our oldest, and if we had just had him, we would have thought we were the best parents in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's great when you have a child who really collaborates with you naturally, but not all children do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm wondering about that because, again, because we have children with different come-froms, different personalities, different, who knows where it comes from, experiences in the womb. I don't know. You know, what would you say was your first indication about your son, who you lost, that you knew that he was different than this son who just breezed through everything?
Yeah, well, I think looking back, there were probably little breadcrumbs when he was a young child, but they were very little. It really started to develop when he was about 12 in middle school, and I started to notice that he really questioned his ability to do his academics, and he started to act out a little bit in classes, and he started to withdraw a little bit from us. And that's when I really got the sense that things weren't going well with him. And at that point, we had enough of a connection that he shared with us some of his insecurities and concerns. And that was really when we started the journey of trying to figure out what was going on with him. That was a journey he was pretty resistant to, but we never stopped trying.
One of the strongest pieces of advice that I think I've ever heard about parenting was given to us a couple years ago by a friend who said, teenagers are on a roller coaster, and your job is to be the rails. Your job is not to be riding the roller coaster with them. Your job is to be this stable force. And I think about that a lot. When you're doing exercises to hopefully create a sense of stability and dependability in the parents, is that something that's more of discussion instruction based, or is it, you mentioned Socratic method, or is it actually like, do you kind of role play and go through the things, like, what does it look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and I love that analogy of the roller coaster. And it's so hard when someone you love and you feel responsible for is on a roller coaster. You kind of want to be on the roller coaster with them, but it's not really the way to help them. So the way that it will work is we'll talk about the core principles, and that will be hopefully fairly brief. And then we will do a case study that will probably involve some role play. It really depends on our parent cohort, what works for them, but I think inevitably we will do a combination of discussion and role play. We'll play out, okay, so we're gonna have this conversation. What would you want to say? What is going through your head that you want your child to know? And how's the best way to communicate that? And more importantly, how do you find out what's going on with them without that conversation shutting down? Because the conversation will quickly shut down. So we have to figure out, how do we keep the connection going?
Well, it's an amazing conversation, and we're so thankful that you're doing this good work here in our community. Lots of support out there. Carrie Pickus has been our guest. She, along with her husband, Josh Pickus, have started the nonprofit organization to help parents of struggling adolescents. It's called Trailhead Parent Support. They also partner with Brian Lipinski, who is a longtime, very well-experienced, deep-rooted in all of this work person here in Utah. And this retreat is coming up October 9th through 11th. The website is
trailheadparentsupport.org.
Yes. And then the email again, if some, or is that the best way to just have people go to the website?
Website or email, which is trailheadparent@gmail.com.
Okay. Carrie, thank you so much for being with us today on The Mountain Life.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And since we mentioned it, let's talk really briefly about Live Like Sam. You mentioned the gala, and that is coming up, of course, on Saturday, September 27th. It's going to be at the Grand Hyatt at Deer Valley, that new place. I haven't been there.
It's big and fabulous.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Live and silent auction, gourmet three-course dinner, live music and dancing. It's all about raising funds to help support families and youth in our community. So thanks again to Carrie Pickus, and we will be back after these words. We'll be talking, switching gears big time, talking about the Utah Avalanche Center with Director Caroline Miller. Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
The Utah Avalanche Center is rooted deep in our winter culture here in Park City. And thanks to the good work of the UAC, our population of winter sport enthusiasts is more well-educated, prepared, and in the know when it comes to avalanche safety. Or at least that's the hope.
Today we welcome Utah Avalanche Center Director Caroline Miller, who is somewhat new in her role. She joins to talk about the ongoing mission and the best party of the year, after which we just can't stop thinking snow.
And that party is the 32nd annual Backcountry Benefit. It's coming up on September 11th. That's a Thursday in Salt Lake City. Get your tickets now. And Caroline Miller, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here with both of you.
Well, we're really happy to have you. And we haven't had a chance to talk with you yet. You're pretty new to the role. And Chad Brocklesberg, who's one of my favorite people in this community, used to always come on when he was director. And he stepped away to do some special projects for the UAC. Yeah. But you are the director. So let's hear about your background.
Yeah, it's been great to be here. I started last June, so just over a year ago now. And as we geared up for last year's Backcountry Benefit, Chad was helping me with so many odds and ends, including this interview last year. So it's great to be with both of you now. As you mentioned, I joined last year, and my history has been just this weave of nonprofit experience and ski industry experience. I lived in Utah before, but most recently I came back from the Sierras, where I was working in ski resort management. And it's just, I'm so grateful to be back here in Utah. It's such a vibrant community. I did my master's here about 10 years ago, so it's nice to be back, and I love being a part of the Avalanche Center.
Well, it's great to see that there is a woman at the helm.
Yes.
And there are also a lot of women that have been scattered throughout as forecasters. I'm thinking Evelyn Lees has been a longtime forecaster. Mm. And then Paige, whose last name I can't pronounce,
Pagnuco.
Well, no wonder I can't. Yeah. And she's been up in Logan for a long time.
Yep.
And she's also, I believe, in a new leadership role.
Yes, that's correct. So we transitioned around the same time, which was just happenstance. So Paige became the Forest Service Avalanche Center Director last May. The Utah Avalanche Center is a public-private partnership, and so we have two directors. There's the Avalanche Center Forest Service Director, which is Paige, and then I'm the nonprofit executive director. So we work hand in hand, are talking all the time about the different puts and takes it takes to run the Avalanche Center.
Well, what kinds of things do the funds that are raised at events like the Backcountry Benefit, what do those funds support?
Yeah, great question. All of the funds we raise go directly towards our programs, which is forecasting, avalanche education, and our awareness programs. Our awareness programs are the ones that people typically have the most questions about because it's a more generalized definition. And those are our free meeting people in the community events, so our trailhead events, our Know Before You Go program, providing people with the education and the skills to use our resources. So the funding from the Backcountry Benefit will go towards funding avalanche forecasting. It will go towards funding the instructors and the tools we need for our education courses, and then towards getting low cost and free information out into the public. Our website is a huge public safety tool that we use to get that message out, and the funding goes towards all the different avenues to get forecasting into the hands of people across the state of Utah.
Sure, and what is your website and what else can they find there?
Yeah, great question. Our website is utahavalanchecenter.org. And there's so much information they can find there. Next month, they'll be excited to see a nice facelift on the website. This summer, we've been doing a bunch of back-end updates. So next month, it'll look fancy and swanky. So get excited. And on the website, you can find the daily forecast throughout the winter. And so that's typically mid-November through mid-April, just depending on weather and lots of different variables. They can find information on our classes. I very regularly get asked when our education classes are going to become available because they're coveted and they go quickly. So early September, you can look at our website for signing up for avalanche classes, on snow classes, as well as the schedule of all of our events. So we have snow and avalanche workshops coming up in November and December. We have so many different community-based events. We'll do a fun party at Park City Brewing in October. So lots of good things on the website.
Yeah, that's great. You guys are quite an amazing nonprofit. It's not just a place to go and find out about what the Daily Avalanche Report is. There's just so much more. It's so deep. It's really great. I wanted to make a note. How many forecasters do you have?
Yeah, great question. We currently have 11.
11, okay. And you have them from sort of down in the LaSalle area, mm-hmm. down near Moab, all the way up to northern Utah.
Yep, that's correct. So we have field offices in Moab, Salt Lake, Skyline area, so Ephraim, Spring City, Logan, I think I mentioned them all. Yes.
Yeah,
so we have forecasters throughout the state, which is... It's a lot of work for 11 forecasters to cover such a big area, eight forecast regions.
Yeah, it really is. Now, over the years, I've always had this distinction made between the Forest Service mm-hmm. and then the fundraising arm, which you mentioned. But can you go into that a little bit more? I think it's, you know, does it generally have to do with the Forest Service not being able to fundraise, really?
Sure.
And you need to for all these extra amazing things that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll go back in history, but I'll be brief about it, I promise. So in 1980, the Forest Service sanctioned and blessed that we could have Avalanche Center rangers, so we could have Forest Service rangers doing Avalanche Center work. And like many public-private partnerships, the funding provided by the Forest Service, it was just deemed not quite sufficient to provide the product that we wanted to provide. So in 1990, the Friends of the Utah Avalanche Center was formed to bridge that gap between the funding that the Forest Service provides and what is the cost to do that work. And so we are very entrenched in each other. We're, you know, legally all one entity in many ways, but it's a Friends group. And then the Forest Service Avalanche Center. And like you mentioned, the Forest Service team, they're not allowed to do fundraising because of the federal program. And so that's where the nonprofit Friends Group comes in, where we do the fundraising, education, awareness, and we really just are, it's great to be so connected to each other.
Well, everybody knows that avalanche forecasting is critical and invaluable to people who are recreating mm-hmm. out there. They're skiing, they're hiking. Why is it relevant for those who might not be doing that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. You know, we focus so much time and energy on our Know Before You Go program because Utah is such a wonderful hub for people from all over the country to come. And a lot of individuals don't know whether or not they're accessing avalanche terrain, whether they're just out walking their dog. There's so many wonderful places where you can walk your dog or go for a snowshoe, and you couldn't make an avalanche if you tried. And there are many places where people maybe wouldn't suspect that they're in avalanche terrain. So we think it's both important as a public safety resource to be educating the communities around the state of Utah that are adjacent to the mountains so that they know what is avalanche terrain and am I accessing it? And then if they're choosing to be there for fun and want to continue to dive deeper into the backcountry, they know what tools are available to them. And really that's our goal, is to just be a tool and a resource to help people make good decisions.
That's a great point, especially with all the visitors we have really from all over the world, that they could inadvertently stumble across an area that is high risk and unfortunately do this something. Yeah. What could people expect if they are able to attend the backcountry benefit on September 11th?
Yes, great question. Lots of fun. So there will be, we've had about 1,000 people, a little over 1,000 people there the last handful of years. Like you mentioned, Lynn, this is the 32nd year, so we're really excited to continue this exceptional tradition. The night goes from 6 to 10 p.m. There will be food from Utah Food Services, music from Herbin Empire. You get 2 drink tickets with your purchase of a ticket. There will be an opportunity drawing and a silent auction. And then we do this new product that we started last year, which is called a trip plan, which is a fun way to interact with vendors. There's about 40 vendors that are attending. And so it's a great way to interact with the vendors, and you rack up points and you can get prizes based on the points that you earn. So,
and just one note of where this event takes place. It's at the parking lot adjacent to Black Diamond Equipment on 39th South. And it's 2092 East. I never remember exactly where Black Diamond is. Is it 33rd? Is it 39th? Is it 45th?
You come across it and you're like, oh yeah, there it is. Yeah,
exactly. And it really makes a great venue. It's very festive. If you are just a winter enthusiast, mm-hmm. I always think that it's such a good time to start getting excited about the upcoming snow year. And there's something about this rain over the last couple of days that really also puts us in that trajectory. It really does.
Absolutely.
So it's true what you said, because I've tried to, I get to about early December and I think, oh, I'm going to sign up for an avalanche safety course. And it's so way too late, because do they even start earlier than that sometimes? No. Or they start in December, but they're all booked up.
They do, yeah.
So you really need to get on Utah Avalanche Center.org mm-hmm. quickly and sign up for those. Talk about how many, I think in recent years there have been more offerings in the Park City area.
That's correct. So we are continuously trying to expand our offerings in the Park City area, on the Wasatch Back as a whole, and across the state. While we have a main office in Salt Lake, you know, we are continuously trying to offer products outside of the central Wasatch and outside of the Salt Lake area. So we do have a few courses that will be out of the Park City area this winter. Another great resource that I just want to make sure all Park City folks know about is the Pinebrook Beacon Park. This is a free service. It's between Park City Day School and the Inspired Summits main office. And it's an amazing resource where anybody throughout the winter can go and practice their avalanche transceiver training and drills, and it's free to the public. So if you end up not being able to get into a class, don't hesitate to reach out about what the resources are available for folks that are open and ready all the time. And like you mentioned, they do fill up quickly. We're continuously trying to expand our offerings to meet the needs of the community. We're really excited this year because last year we tried a couple new types of classes focusing on families. So there's a family backcountry 101 where you can sign up with your kids, and we just do a unique teaching style that's more approachable for parents and kids working in tandem. Additionally, we're excited to expand our introduction to avalanche rescue and wilderness medicine. So it's a day where you can go out and learn about rescue fundamentals, but then also learn about, okay, if I were to have to unbury my ski partner, what do I do next? How do I have some rudimentary backcountry medicine skills to possibly meet their needs? So we're excited about those offerings as well.
Yeah, those are really great. Does every Utah school child get the Know Before You Go program?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. We work with a handful of schools, and the Know Before You Go curriculum is actually accredited to be taught in schools. We have found over the last handful of years, just with increased requirements within schools, it is at times hard to find time within the school day, just because there's already so many assemblies about other very, very, very important topics. I'm certainly not negating the importance of those. So not every child does, but we work with many schools. I mentioned Park City Day School, the McGillis School, and that is really what our Know Before You Go program was started for, was to reach middle school, high school kids who are accessing the backcountry with their friends and giving them those skills. So we're excited to continue that school investment and involvement.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm glad to know what that was in Pinebrook, because I live in Pinebrook, It's kind of in this field that's over by the Macy's grocery store there. And I was like, what in the heck is going on over there? Yeah. So now that's great to know what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Is there a mailing list or a text notification or something that people could sign up for if they want to get more frequent updates?
Absolutely. We love to email people. So if you go to our website, utahavalanchecenter.org, at the bottom of the page, you can sign up for our Powder Cloud newsletter, which gets you on our email mailing list. But additionally, we have an SMS notification that you can sign up for, which you can select which region you live in, and then get avalanche forecast updates by text message, which is a really great product we've been excited to offer over the last couple of years. So all of that can be found on our website. Additionally, if you go to our website and purchase some swag, a hat, a sweatshirt, something like that, you can opt in to be on our mailing list as well.
Oh, nice. So I know it's hard to do these kind of things in a real nutshell situation, but if you're a person who hasn't really had much exposure in the backcountry, can you just give us a idea of like the first kind of time of year or conditions where we should start being extra aware of avalanche risk?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's an old adage that if there's enough snow to ride, there's enough snow to slide. Mm. So we're thinking about avalanches all the time. and so really we encourage people to start thinking about avalanches as soon as it starts snowing. Obviously, there is going to be times where there's some snow on the ground and there are not avalanches. But we encourage people to start thinking about it as they do their regular winter, you know, house maintenance and life maintenance, getting everything, battening down the hatches for winter. I know many people who are snow sports enthusiasts start to do their prep in the fall. And really, we just encourage people who are accessing the backcountry to start looking at our website and our resources and offerings. In the fall, we offer so many Know Before You Go classes or presentations. It's a one-hour presentation in the fall, really starting in late September, early October. And that is just meant to serve as that that point of information for people looking to know where should I be traveling and where should I take extra caution when traveling.
One thing that's really helped me, I love the backcountry, but I want to never, ever, ever in my life be involved in an avalanche. And so I'm extremely, extremely cautious. And I downloaded the Inclinometer app.
Mm, yeah.
There are many that you can just have right on your phone. You don't even have to have a special inclinometer. That always really helps me. Yeah. I just won't go anywhere steeper than 25 degrees. I don't care if it's, bulletproof, safe. Those kinds of things. It's almost like the more you know, the more scared you can be, and the more you think you don't know. There's a sweet spot about knowledge there. Yeah. So more knowledge is always great, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that avalanche science is really often a behavior science, because we are constantly digesting information about where did incidents occur and why did an incident occur. From a scientific perspective, and trying to regurgitate that into an action on our part of how can we augment our education products, or how can we better communicate what we're seeing. And so For some people, that is certainly the case, that the more they know, the more that it can be fearful. And we're certainly not trying to create a culture of fear around avalanches, while meanwhile trying to teach exactly that, where can you go recreate and have a great avalanche avoidance mindset and be successful. In our Backcountry 101 course, we do talk a lot about that, of how do you navigate the backcountry in a way where you can have a wonderful day and not experience avalanche terrain.
Yeah. You also have this wonderful reporting that kind of goes along with what you were saying, that post-event, post-incident, you go in and evaluate like the next day, and the stories that are told are, it's just such an education, knowing about, you know, what were people maybe thinking when they went in here, and not just about snow science. Where do you find that?
Yeah, so on our website, one of the really exceptional tools is our observation and avalanche database. There's a map so that you can look at, if you're going out into the backcountry tomorrow and you want to see what observations have been made by public or avalanche forecasters, you could pinpoint your location or the aspect and elevation you're going to be going into. So that is on our website as well, in addition to those avalanche incident reports. Our forecasters do a really incredible and thorough job of creating those reports and really trying to provide the facts and the different components that go into each near miss or incident that occurs. And I'm really continuously impressed by their professionalism in those reports. And those observations, like you mentioned, are a great data point for people looking to get more information.
The 32nd annual Backcountry Benefit. Get your tickets now. We're so thankful that Caroline Miller, the executive director of the Utah Avalanche, the Friends of the Utah Avalanche Center, is joining us in the studio today. And don't miss the party, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. September 11th. We can't wait.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And happy upcoming winter, everyone.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm usually not excited for winter, but this something about this rain and maybe the lack of it all summer long.
Like, yes. Okay,
let's bring on some other weather here. All right. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City.